You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
Welcome to the Choose FI Radio Podcast. Today we're going to be speaking with Miss Adventure Rich, who blogs over at adventurerich.com. This is going to be a very lighthearted episode. She is a wonderful guest, and she's going to be sharing her story. It's really the story of her, her husband, and their son as they just pursue financial independence and have fun along the way. One of the topics that we're going to discuss is this idea of planned spontaneity, which is a tactic that I think many of us should be incorporating into our lives, but probably haven't even considered before. So it's going to be a great episode. I can't wait to get started. And to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I'm doing well. I've been looking forward to this one. We met Mrs. AR at FinCon this past year, got to know her and planned for this podcast. And I've really been looking forward to it because of those little spontaneous bits of fun put in a day. And I'm just so curious, like, they live this life of adventure. I know that's something that honestly is missing from my own life, even though we're in this five lifestyle. And I'm just so curious to learn from her and just get a list, even just of these fun little things that you can do to add into your life. I think it's going to be really valuable for the audience. So with that, Mrs. AR, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
So Mrs. AR, you know, one of the things that I always like to start with when we're bringing someone on the show for the first time is really just discuss how you found this rabbit hole of financial independence. You know, what it meant for you and your family to find it. Were you always on this path, or was there like a turn or a fork in the road and you had to make a choice?
So I think it was a multi-step process, and it kind of came just a bit at a time. My parents seemed to be very good with money. They taught me to, you know, save and be wise with money. But I got out of college and did not know where to go, did not know what to do. I seemingly had everything set up. I had my first job. I had a car. I had a place to live. But I had no idea what to do with my money. But I also knew, well, now I've got the car loan. I've got student loans. I didn't want those hanging over my head. And I think I was really pulled to wanting options. So I just said, well, let's start chipping away at more than those minimum payments. Let's get those taken care of. So I started working my way along those a little bit and started having conversations with other people and realized that there were either kind of two camps that I was running into. People who were just kind of on cruise control and saying, you know, I have these loans, I have this stuff, it's okay. It just kind of is the way it is. This is what the life of an American is. But then I met some other people who were saying, here, let me loan you this book. Let me give you, you know, this website. How about you go check this out? And it wasn't in a pushy way at all, but someone gave me a book. I think it was Financially Stupid People Are Everywhere and How Not to Be One of Them. And then after I read that, he turned around and handed me The Millionaire Next Door. And those two books just opened my eyes to really not financial independence yet. It was just simply money management and being wise with your money. And from there, I started to literally Google, how do you invest? How do you, you know, personal finance? And that's when I stumbled on blogs. I think some of the first ones were Budgets Are Sexy and Get Rich Slowly at the time. And the rabbit hole went from there.
That's really cool. I'm curious, how did you find that person who loaned you those books? Like how did that topic of conversation even come up?
It was a coworker. And I think I had just been asking maybe some questions about the 401k plan or something like that. Because again, I had these things in my mind, like investing is good or having money in a 401k is good. Go to your employer match. Like, so I had these little tidbits where I don't even know where I picked them up along the way, but I had these things I'd heard saying like, this is a good idea, or people in passing saying things like that. So I would do that. But then I'm like, well, what else can I do? Like, what else is there that could help me maybe set myself up a little bit better? So it was actually just through a chat with a coworker. I think it was a Friday afternoon. So not as many people were in the office, and just started talking about things. And he's like, you know, completely your call. You could take this book and never look at it, but I have a book I think you might be interested in reading. Really helped me out. And that's how it started.
So I'm curious, how many years ago was this when that conversation happened?
That was about 6 years ago now.
Okay. And from your perspective, now that you have gone farther down this road, do you find yourself being on the other side of that conversation?
I hope so. I feel like I have to toe a fine line along that. So there are absolutely times where, and it depends kind of relationship-wise or comfort level-wise, there are times that I am very open with people. I've got a really good relationship with my brother. So there are times that he'll just call me up and be like, hey, I got a new job. What should I be doing about these things? But there are other times that even if it's just kind of in passing, hey, I really like this book. You know, it's a really interesting one. I do try to start to put those feelers out there and offer those up just because I know it took someone who probably has no idea now that, well, he started a nerd train into personal finance, but you know, just him by, you know, mentioning a few things and loaning me a book really started a radical change in my life in some ways.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? The dominoes falling where he mentions just a book to you and now you have a blog. You're on Choose a Fi speaking in front of tens of thousands of people. People look up to you. That's remarkable. And Jonathan, I hope, like, I know we get so much out of every one of our guests, and I imagine you asked that last question because you're taking notes on how to help the fire spread in your own personal life. One thing I often say is try to find those people who ask that question about money, who might clip coupons or something. It's people who are even loosely aware of money. And it sounds like your colleague did something very similar, right? He heard you asking about a 401k. He said, okay, maybe Mrs. AR is someone who could possibly be open to this. So read this book, don't read it, but you know, here it is. That's a great strategy.
And knowing my personality, that was absolutely the way to go because he's a more experienced colleague. He's older than me, everything like that. If he had been like, oh, you should absolutely do this. You should. Probably my gut reaction would be, nope. So that's where I feel like I have to be very intentional and careful with how I approach this because I never want to be going up to someone and just feeling like the know-it-all or the person who I feel very fortunate and very blessed for the knowledge that we have been able to, you know, come upon and the moves that we have been able to make throughout our life. But I know that that isn't the place that everyone's at. So I want to be also very conscious of that and making sure I don't sound like a know-it-all or anything like that and meet someone where they are. So even if it's just at the very basics of, hey, maybe, you know, taking a look at your finances and seeing last month, did you make more than you spent? You know, starting at, you know, some of the basics because you never know where someone's at. And that's kind of essential for knowing where to, you know, guide someone.
You know, and one thing that really stands out to me about your blog is how centered it is on the family, on your family and your family's adventures together. And so how does this work? Did you and your husband get on board at the same time? Is this something where you slowly converted him or you just found a like mind and it just came together at the perfect time?
I'd say it was a slow conversion in some ways. I met my husband soon after I graduated from college. Throughout our dating, it was when I was first getting into reading some of these blogs. So every so often I'd send him an article or so. But throughout our dating, you know, we started talking about our life, our financial situation, you know, the potential of possibly getting married. And as we went through those conversations, you know, we definitely incorporated finance into those conversations. And it's something, it's funny, it would have been so easy to skip over now that I look back. And I'm so glad that we didn't. I'm so glad we had some of those conversations. There was aspects, you know, he had to come to me and say, you know, I do have credit card debt. And I said, well, I've got student loan and a car debt. We just started taking a look at our finances together, actually, even before we got engaged and started saying, what are the things that we can do to start chipping away? And it was not looking at financial independence at all. Honestly, I had heard about that. I thought that that was like a pie in the sky, not going to happen. You know, that was just for other people. But what I saw was if we could pay off our debt, if we could start to invest more, if we could save more, the only thing we would be doing is creating options. There wasn't going to be any negative effect to that. So we would, you know, have fun with frugal dates or invite people over for a barbecue rather than always going out. Or, I mean, we definitely mixed in. Sure, we went to go grab drinks or we went to dinner every so often, but neither of us are very sit down at a fancy dinner restaurant type people. So it was pretty easy to say, hey, our date's going to be, you know, we're going to head over, do some kind of a hike and end up afterwards with a barbecue and do those type of adventures that helped us to start to chip away at our finances at the same time. So on the financial side, it was more at the beginning, just pay off debt and start saving. And then as we kept doing that more and more, and we had paid off our debt, suddenly we had this realization of, you know, we really do have an opportunity. Not so much, I don't know if the retire early is something that really calls to us, but the opportunity for options and just the opportunity to say, I choose to be at this job or I choose to do something else. That was the bottom line for us. And that started to really spur us on to further work on our finances, even after we had paid off debt.
Yeah, I love that. I definitely want to go further with your story, but I do want to just take a step back real quick and ask about those conversations when you were dating and when you were engaged. So many people have difficulty talking about that, even with the person they're closest to. And I'm curious if you have any advice for people in that situation. Like, how do you broach the topic? How did you guys first talk about it? Because I imagine, just putting myself in your shoes, that first time was a little awkward. And I'm curious if you could think back to that and just give some advice maybe for the audience.
You know, I think one of the things, and I think this is why I have a hard time even remembering how it came up. I don't think we intentionally sat down and said, here is the day that we're going to sit down and talk about money. You know, we didn't just sit down and say, this is our moment. This is our like reckoning on personal finance. Let's lay it all out. It happened over time. So part of it was I had, you know, just been reading this book about The Millionaire Next Door. And so I was just talking to him about it, saying, hey, this is really interesting. There are these people who drive normal cars. They live in normal houses. They probably look like the neighbors that we've grown up next to, and they're millionaires. I had no idea that was out there. To me, millionaire meant flashy lifestyle, big house, nice car. I just had no idea. So I think just like little conversations that we had started to spiral. And then we started to say, well, let's look at what our income is and let's look at what some of the things we have are. And then I think when we both realized that we had combined a decent amount of debt, we said, you know, what are the things that we can do to take action on this? Because I think it was even at the point we were dating, we were pretty sure we were going to get engaged. But I mean, in our minds, I guess, again, what would be the harm if we both started paying off our debt and we had broken up or something? Well, we both would have been in a better financial position. So I remember distinctly, he started selling stuff that he just didn't use anymore and putting it towards his debt. And I started, you know, trying to cut back on certain areas and putting it towards my debt. And so it just was kind of a combined effort of saying like little conversations along the way that ultimately led to the bigger financial conversations, but it was never this, let's sit down and talk about the elephant in the room. It just naturally came up. And I will say the one bit advice I would say is never going into the blame game or never going into the, why did you do that? Or like, how do you have that or this or what a stupid decision? Because that's not going to help anything. It was more like, okay, that's what that number is. That's the amount of debt we have on that category. Next, you know, what's our next, you know, line item? What's our next thing that we need to address? Yeah, never getting into that because obviously that's just not going to help any relationship.
So your blog is Adventure Rich, and I love that it paints this picture for me that life is full of opportunity and there's all these fun games that you can play, you know, over this span of time that we have. But sometimes in many people's minds, there's a limiting belief that because you're intentional and frugal, because your goals are to pay down debt, that you have to sacrifice adventure. Essentially, that's the perfect word for it. And you have to live somewhat of a mundane, boring lifestyle to get to A to B. And and you've kind of rejected that out of hand. And I guess the open-ended question here is, you know, how do you stay interesting and adventurous both during the dating, engagement, early marriage, and not spend money?
Yeah, I think the big thing was realizing, what does adventure really mean to us? We actually were on our first date, and I distinctly remember he had picked me up early. We were going to go mountain biking and then we were going to just hang out, have a picnic. In some ways, it was the perfect day. And in some ways, everything went wrong. And we just kept saying throughout it, always an adventure. We had such a blast. You know, we get out mountain biking on this hot California day. We'd run out of water. We get back to the beach where we had parked my husband's truck, and he gets like swamped by a rogue wave and is completely soaked. We start driving to a restaurant and the car breaks down. I mean, everything like kept going back and forth. And I remember afterwards, he had told me, you know, I knew you were probably a good person to date because you just kept laughing. You didn't get mad when everything, you know, everything kept going wrong. But throughout it, I think the thing is just realizing like, what does adventure mean? And for us, it isn't globetrotting around the world necessarily. It isn't going and, you know, doing the expensive like heli skiing or doing these epic scuba diving adventures or something where you're going to have to potentially, unless you're travel hacking, you know, pay a lot of money to get there, do the events, do the adventures. For us, adventure is just something, kind of that internal spark that says, hey, this is living for me. This is life. And so that could be right outside our front door. That could be in our living room. That could be in our local area. You know, it doesn't even have to be an epic place. Sometimes we have the best adventures at what would look just like a normal city park. So I think it's just realizing what is that adventure. And for us, it's more kind of that maybe emotional or feeling aspect of like, this is life. And we feel like we're really living life right now. And that doesn't necessitate a lot of money oftentimes or a lot of like time off or anything like that. It's something that we can do every day.
You know, Miss AR, the phrase that I latched onto was that internal spark. You know, what is it that lights you up? And one of the things that I know you talk about on your blog is this idea of planned spontaneity. You know, I tease people in the past when they say, hey, let's make a plan to talk and come up with a plan next week. And it's that let's make a plan to make a plan, right? But this is even better. And I'd love to hear you talk to us just for a little bit about planned spontaneity.
Absolutely. So what I've realized is with myself, I'm a type A person. So a lot of times I do want things to like have a pretty good plan or, you know, sometimes the complete drop of a hat things are a little bit harder for me, but I still love to have adventure and have an aspect of spontaneity in my life. So what we've realized, kind of our common ground, is in order for us to be able to just at the drop of a hat do different things, I can give some examples, but I'll give a little bit of the setup first. In order to be able to do things with the drop of a hat, there's a certain setup that we need. So for example, in the summer, we have a car that is stocked with a beach blanket, some basics, sometimes even just like our swimsuits and our sunscreen, toys to go to the beach, the stroller for our son, just different things are already in the car. We have kind of some things that are in go bags ready to go by the door. And that's just where they live, because there are times when last summer, my husband and I were both working full time. He would come home from work. I would be making dinner. Dinner's hot on the stove. And he would just come up and look at me and say, any chance you want to go to the beach and watch the sunset? I'm just sitting there looking. I'm like, well, there's hot chicken in the oven. There's potatoes on the stove. Like, what do you mean about that? He would just grab Tupperware. We'd throw everything in there. We had everything else packed. It was such an, you know, low barrier of entry for me to say, okay, let's jump in the car. Let's grab some forks, like grab a beer or two from the fridge and jump in the car. And we would just go somewhere and go do something. Another day after work one time, we had just bought a used canoe off of Craigslist. And so it was still on my husband's car. And he just looked at me and said, you want to go check, you know, use this? And it was after dinner. It was probably 6:30, 7 p.m. on a Thursday night. And I just kind of looked at him like, well, sure. I mean, I don't really have, what else would I do? Right now, I would probably just try to start getting our son to bed, maybe watch some Netflix. I don't know. So instead, you know, yeah, our son went to bed later, but we jumped in the car. We went to a local river and we just had some fun in a canoe for a little bit. And so just having those things that prepare you to be able to say yes when those opportunities arise are the big aspects for me of planning spontaneity.
I absolutely love that. And to me, this almost all comes back to that very first date, that mindset you had that this is an adventure. And when you're looking at life like that, mindset is so important. And we do talk about this a lot here, but it is essential just to really, really drill down on this. Most people would go on that date and say, oh, here are all the bad things that happened. But you guys just rolled with the punches, right? And it's like, it is amazing when you have that positive mindset. Like we went on this trip to Mexico recently, my family, and in our mind's eye, it was a flawless trip. It was just amazing. We would go back in a heartbeat. But then I started reading all these reviews on TripAdvisor and people pointed out all the negatives. And I'm like, oh yeah, maybe the pool was cold. Oh yeah, maybe there weren't these options. And I never would have remembered that because I had that positive mindset. And I love that you guys do that with the approach to adventure that, okay, maybe I have hot food on the stove and maybe most families would sit down and that would be the night, right? Watching Netflix, but we are open to adventure. I absolutely love that. And I really wanted to take a minute to point that out to the audience.
And I will say, you know, one thing with that positive mindset, especially towards adventure or really any aspect of life, that's definitely something sometimes I struggle with. It isn't that I'm just this person who will always, you know, happily skip across, you know, and be like, yes, of course, we'll go on an adventure. This is great. There are the times that I definitely do feel like, you know, it's a little bit more of a grind, or I, you know, have the weeks where they're either busy or rough or we're all sick or whatever the case may be. I can really see the downside of it. Or the times that, yeah, we're trying to get to somewhere and we almost miss our flight. And those kind of things stress me out to no end. I'm not a nice person to be around in those situations. So there are absolutely those times that it's a real struggle to see the sense of adventure and also to stay on the positive side. But oftentimes I realize when I am in a little bit of those ruts, it's because I am piling thing after thing and I'm not allowing myself the flexibility or, you know, the opportunity to just either even just take a breath, enjoy a cup of coffee without doing five other things at the same time, walking to the mailbox sometimes. Like, we have a quarter mile long driveway, so the walk to a mailbox can be the perfect thing for me to clear my head. Sometimes I'm outdoors, I can just have that moment of perspective. Things like that, I definitely have to make sure I do, because it isn't always easy to see that sense of adventure. And so, yeah, it's definitely something that I think my husband and I both have to work on.
That reminds me of the reform type A personality, right? Like you're saying,
yes.
Because I'm sitting here saying that is exactly me. Like, I try to stay open, I try to stay happy, but, you know, if something bad happened in the airport and we missed our flight or something, I would be sitting there grumbling too. So
yep.
you do need to take a step back. And I also wanted to point out what I think is brilliant is you guys setting up those go bags and being ready to move on this adventure, as opposed to, like, my wife and I will say, oh, we should go to the park this morning. It's a Saturday morning. It's beautiful. It's 9:30. But then you have to pack up snacks. You have to pack up all the gear. And it's that little impediment makes such a difference, even though rationally it's 10 minutes. You know, we could just get it going. But enabling those habits, people talk about this with, like, exercise. If you lay out your clothes the night before and you wake up and you see your sneakers and your gym clothes, you're going to get in them and you're going to get moving. And that reminds me of these go bags. And do you have any other things that you guys line up that make it easier to go on these adventures?
I think another thing, and well, maybe one or two other things that I'd say. So one thing is we have a map of our area in our basement. It's a map that we actually went and spent a little bit of money and got it laminated so that we can write on it with dry erase board markers. On one side, we actually, there was kind of a blank part of the map. I think it's where Lake Michigan is. And we just had them put in, I think it's just a little piece of paper. So it looks like you have this map and then you have this place that you could write on. We just jot down places that we want to go, places that we haven't been, or places we've really enjoyed. Or we'll circle things on the map. That's just for us a visual way of reminding ourselves. I could, you know, a lot of these adventures, because they aren't planned, they could so easily be just put on the shelf and we could say, oh, tomorrow or another day. But if I walk out of, I have, you know, a home office here for my work. If I walk out of my office and see, oh yeah, we've been really meaning to go over and bring the canoe to that one river, or we've been really meaning to go and check out the sunset over Lake Michigan at that beach, or we've been really meaning to, you know, go for that hike. It's just seeing that there can be that little spark that says, well, I already have the bags ready and the snacks ready. It'll take me 5 minutes to go get changed. You know, we get our son ready and we could be out of the house in 10 to 15 minutes and heading to go doing that, to do that adventure. And just realizing that, you know, again, kind of having that in our mind. And then the other thing, last summer we had some fun. We actually took a calendar, just a normal flip calendar, and we would write like a B on it every day that we went to the beach. And I think we had some other letters that we had, because we just wanted to go through. And what was kind of ironic to us, we lived in Southern California, not too far from the ocean for about 4 years for us. I guess for me, for my husband, it was longer, but we rarely went to the beach. We would probably go maybe a handful of times, half dozen a year. And then we moved to the place in Northern Michigan that has winter half of the year and summer only a few months. And we probably got to the beach 20, 30 times this year. We almost started kind of making it a game. So it was, how many days can we put, you know, that B on the calendar that says that we went to the beach? You know, sometimes it would mean we went biking and ended up at the beach. Sometimes it meant we went canoeing and ended up at the beach. Sometimes we just went to the beach and had fun. So it was just those little things that started to make it, you know, put it in the forefront of our mind more often, so that we'd get done with work or we'd hit Sunday afternoon after church and say, what are we going to do today? And we'd kind of have that in our mind. Let's go do something. Let's go get out and have some kind of adventure.
I'm wondering, you know, after you've been doing this for a while, do people know, like, do you have a reputation in your area with your friends that you know all the different things that you can do in your area? I guess what I'm asking is, are you a closet adventurer?
Well, I would say no, but the reason is because we live in an area where this is the lifestyle. It's more frequent that you have people like us where in various situations of life, we live in this beautiful area and people are very outdoors oriented. So whether it's summer or winter, you will see people in the winter running cross-country skiing, downhill skiing, snowshoeing, snowmobiling, just out there, ice fishing all of the time. And in the summer, you just switch to the summer sports. You know, you're boating or canoeing or kayaking, you're paddleboarding, you're at the beach, you're hiking, you're running, you're biking, all of those things. It just kind of is the culture around here. So I'd actually say we would be a little bit more odd if we just sat inside all day. And I mean, granted, that's a very broad generalization to our area, but just whenever you go anywhere in our area, it's rare to show up somewhere and it's the empty area and no one else is out, you know, enjoying the weather that we have. Well, and even if it's snowy and cold weather, people are out enjoying it. So I feel like we're in an area that also cultivates that. And that was intentional for us when we moved back here.
I just want to go back real quick to that laminated map. I think that is a stroke of genius. That is one of the coolest things. We are definitely going to do that because I'm just so impressed with this planned spontaneity. I think that's really important. And like Jonathan kind of said, it sounds a little odd when you first think about it, but it's creating that framework to allow you to be spontaneous. And I try to set this up with my wife, Laura. She's the detail person. I would be absolutely worthless if it wasn't for Laura. But I said like, hey, let's get a list of here are like one day hikes or one day trips we want to take. Here are 2 days. Here are if we have a long weekend or something like mm-hmm. that. Let's get this list so that we see it. So it's 8 a.m. on a Saturday and we want to go somewhere. We don't have to then recreate the wheel. It's set up. We have the list. Oh, we're going to drive 2 hours to Roanoke, Virginia and go on a hike and go to some breweries or something like that. It's there. And I think that's really important and such a difference maker that you guys do.
And I think the thing is, there's so often that either someone will suggest something to us. And so it'll be those mental notes, right? And for me, mental notes are the worst kind of notes because they always get lost. So it'll be, you know, the mental note of, oh, someone said that that's a really cool place or a thing to do or whatever it is. But by writing it down, then I'll remember. Or it's, again, just looking at a map and kind of going around being like, huh, I had no idea there was a lake there. Why don't we go and take a look? And maybe we look and we go there and it's like, this is a very swampy lake. No wonder I've never heard of it. And that's that. We know, you know, and maybe we find a hike there instead of, you know, going to the lake or something like that. But, you know, having that opportunity to say, hey, what's in our area and seeing it visually for me is a big part of it because I grew up in this area. I do know a lot of the things, but I'm always amazed at how many things I'm surprised by or I driving along the road and I look at something, I'm like, I had no idea that was there. We should go check it out. So I actually found recently one of my new favorite running and hiking trails. It is a road that literally I have driven by probably, gosh, I would be shocked if it wasn't thousands of times in my life. There's a main road into town. There's this little road off of it next to a barn, and there's a sign for a hiking trail. I don't know how many times I've driven past that and never thought anything of it. But last year we drove past it and my husband and I both looked at each other and said, do you know what that is? No? Do you know what that is? And so we just went and checked it out and it ends up, it's a really cool area and we love taking our son there.
That's awesome. I mean, you've built your life around adventure. So now you're open to it and you find it, right? That's
yes,
what do they call it? It's a reticular activation, I think, which is, right? It's like when you just go out and buy a Subaru and then all of a sudden you see, you know, 5,000 Subarus on the road.
Yes.
It's your brain is open to adventure. So you're looking for it. And I'm curious. Absolutely. So for people like me who we're open to adventure, we have a family of four, we're looking for things that we can do on like a daily basis. Do you have like a list or like a mental list of just like short 1 hour adventures that, you know, quote unquote adventures, they don't have to be anything amazing, but just something that a regular family or just, you know, a couple or whomever could do on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely. So one of the big things that we really like to do, and this comes partially from moving back to this area within the past year and a half, and for my husband moving here for the first time, we oftentimes like to, in a way, just kind of play tourist in our area. So there are these beautiful walking trails, kind of paved, the rails to trails type of trails in our area. So they're kind of multi-purpose for biking or rollerblading or walking, running, whatever it is. We'll just go to one of the parking lots along the way or somewhere along the way and just walk for a little bit and just see where it takes us or walk along the bay. We live, you know, near a bay of Lake Michigan, and it's gorgeous areas, but it's the places that as locals, we drive past all the time. So trying to stop and say, what's right outside our door? So it doesn't have to be that thing that's an hour away. It's almost kind of saying, if I was coming for the first time, I had never been here, what would I be shocked by? And for us, it's the bay is right there. Our downtown is really beautiful. So sometimes we'll just, you know, especially in the winter, it's all lit up with beautiful lights on the trees and everything like that. A very like cozy winter feel. We'll just go and walk around. We won't go into any of the shops. We'll just park downtown, walk the street, and then get back in our car and go home. But we did that after dinner instead of maybe, you know, again, just something that might be more routine. And just by getting out of that house, you know, maybe that walk is when we have that conversation or we see something else that makes us think, hey, we should go do that sometime. So it's a lot of those just little things of trying to say, what if I came here for the first time would surprise me that I probably am just used to and I drive past every day and I don't even think about it, and just trying to get out and take advantage of those things.
You know, Brad, there's times where I can tell my wife is going to listen to a podcast and just lean in. And I know that this is what she wants for our family. These are the ideas that she has been grappling with and try to figure out how to incorporate into our life. And what we're talking about, I mean, it's the gamification of life. And I think one of the things that people latch onto, at least initially, is that you're so busy, right? Quote unquote, we have no time. Mm-hmm. And the sad stat that I can't pull up at this moment, but I'm pretty sure it's close enough to be reflective and applicable to this conversation, is that the average American family watches 5 hours plus of television per day. The TV is on for 5 hours plus a day in our homes. And at the same time, we feel like we have no time. Then when we do want to try some sort of adventure, the barrier to entry is just too great. So we don't even consider it. And what you just talked about, and this is what I was alluding to earlier, is this idea of, you know, how many people also at the same time say there's nothing to do in my town, the second limiting belief. And what if you were the travel guide to your city? What if it was your job this entire year? What if 2018 was the year that you said, what is everything I can do in my city? What would it be like if I got a laminate and I knew every single life hack there was in my city, and you created a CV for your city? You know, like when your whole life is your job, your CV documents all of your achievements. And ultimately, in the FI community, we place way less importance on our careers. That's not where we get our identity from. It's from these relationships. It's from our family. It's from the things that bring value to our life. And what if you could build a CV for your city? That's what you're describing.
Hey, this is a great idea for the local groups. Start pulling together crowdsource things for areas.
Yeah, I love that idea with the local groups. I think that we've been looking for ways to really make them more impactful. And like you said, crowdsource. If we can crowdsource from 100 to 200 people in every local group of the neat little things you can do on a daily basis, or a two-day trip or hikes or things like that, that's a really cool way to make this adventure part of our framework. So yeah, that's a really great suggestion. And yeah, you know, I just wanted to kind of go back to your story. So I noticed one of your articles is Confessions of a Fire Blogger. We don't have a FI number or a date. And I'm curious about that. Have you guys talked in a loose framework of what FI looks like, when it might look like, or when it might be, et cetera? Or is this really just kind of, hey, we have a savings rate and that's what how we're moving forward? Like, talk us through, I guess, that article, because that really jumped out to me.
Yeah. So for us, I was just kind of laughing one day talking to my husband. There had been a time in our life, there was probably about a few months where we kept saying we should sit down and calculate our FI number. And every time we tried to pull together numbers, we just had so many question marks in so many boxes. And so we kind of decided together, we're going to pursue this. This doesn't mean that we're not pursuing a state of financial independence for our family. We always want to be able to continue to work and have that as a goal. We are financially stable, but we want to have a point where maybe we have even more options and more flexibility. But for us, it was not right to put an actual FI number or an FI date. And the reason for that is partially this goes to personality. So this may not apply to everyone, but again, I am the type of person, being very type A, if I set a goal or if I set something pretty concrete and say, we are going towards this number or this date, it's hard for me to be flexible with those things. I'd say part of it is probably just like kind of a silly stubbornness. Maybe part of it's keeping myself to a certain standard. I don't know. But it would be really hard for me to change that and to say, you know, hey, actually, we need to back off that date, or we need to up or lower that number. For me, it's just a harder thing. And so when we started to look at our life, I mean, we're relatively young. I'm in my late 20s. My husband's in his mid 30s. We have one kid right now. We really don't know how many kids we will have. You know, we are very blessed with our son. That may be one child, that may be more, that may be, you know, we may adopt children in the future. We just don't know. With our jobs, actually, this is the funny one. At the time of writing this, we both worked full time. Since that time, my husband decided to quit his job. So we didn't want to create a number that was based on our current jobs or our current payment level, our current salary level, because if there was, well, A, something out of our control, like a layoff or something like that, or B, something within our control, maybe there was, whether it was just schedules weren't working out, a bad situation at work, whatever the reason was that we either quit or lowered our income, took a lower income job, we didn't want to have to think, well, if I do this, I'm going to be not hitting our number, or we're going to have to push back our date. You know, we have so much up in the air. We just wanted that flexibility. So what we decided to say is, you know, we're young. We've got a lot of things up in the air. You know, we don't know what's going to happen, or even if things stayed the same, even if we had both continued to work at our jobs and we only have one son and we don't know when he's going to go or where he's going to go to college, what he's going to do, what life is going to throw at us. So we decided that for us, that means that we are intentionally forging ahead towards our goal of being financially independent without setting a date or number at this time. And it's just allowing us that flexibility, allowing us to make the choices that will make our life so much better right now, but that may, quote unquote, hurt our financial independence goal, because we're making choices actually as we speak. You know, we're making choices that is pushing out a theoretical date, making financial independence a further off idea for us, but it's making our life right now so much better. So it is completely worth it.
Wow, that's incredibly, incredibly powerful. And that is the optionality that we're constantly talking about. That's the power of FI. So I definitely want to explore more of that and talk about your husband quitting his job and the impact and how that decision. But before we move on, I just wanted to point out, it seems like you have the mindset game figured out so well. And we've talked about that for the last 30 plus minutes. And where you just said there, like, you know yourself so well that if you set this FI number, you would do everything in your power and to make it happen, that would be the overriding concern. I think that's probably like that old type A personality. I know, like, I'm speaking myself because you're speaking my language here. It's amazing. I'm that reformed type A person. And how did you get over being that type A person? And how have you explored this mindset? Because it seems like you really got it down. And I'm just so impressed.
So I would say in some ways, while there are aspects of me that's a reformed type A, I work at it all the time. And it's something I constantly have to work at. But I think for me, there were times in my life where I, especially growing up, there were times in high school or in college where I really just felt like I was living a very full and a very adventurous, good life. You know, there were just different things that I was aiming towards, different goals that I had, and really incredible kind of, you know, the high points. And there were times that, you know, in those timeframes as well that I had those lower points, or I had times that I'd really get down, like the mental talk in my mind would oftentimes be more toxic. I would really be pretty down and pretty in a rut. And I started to realize throughout it, first of all, I had control over certain things and not over other things. And so the things I had control over, some of the things with mental talk, but also things of taking some action in certain ways. So, you know, instead of getting overwhelmed with the to-dos, trying to focus on one. Or for me more, it's less on some of that side, because typically being type A, I'm pretty good with checking off the boxes and getting the things done and getting all the duties in by deadline, whether it's at work or whether it's my taxes or whatever it is, you know, pretty on top of those things. But for me, it was more kind of the self-care aspects. So making sure I really carved out time in my day for quiet time, for some exercise, for getting outdoors, because those are things that I realized I really enjoyed. And when I didn't have those in my life definitely felt it. You know, I definitely felt more stressed, more in a rut, more like I was just kind of living a grind. And so I started to notice those things throughout high school and college, but it was really, you know, over the past couple of years, just trying to focus in on those things and saying, if I'm really down right now, like, what are some of the things that are triggering this, but also what can I do? Like, what's within my control right now? Because some things aren't, you know, if you've got a screaming baby right here, that part isn't on your in your control. But what could be in your control is putting him in the stroller and getting outside for a minute and letting the screaming not be in the small house, but it's outdoors and you can hear the birds chirping at the same time. And maybe it makes things a little bit easier. So just kind of taking those things that you can control and saying, how can I incorporate those things, and pinpointing the things for me that helped me feel like I was living a really rich and beautiful life at the time, and saying, well, I need to make sure I'm intentional about putting those into my life. The other thing I will say, this has not been all me. It has definitely been a huge help with my husband. We are very different personality types. There are so many ways where I've probably helped to get him in line with kind of the check the box, pay off the debt, like get the things done. And he has helped me so much in the, you don't need to do something right now. You can sit down and enjoy the day. Here's a beer, go sit down. So we definitely have opposite personalities that really end up benefiting each other. And I've learned a lot from him as far as just learning what I can control and what I can put into my life that makes my life better and making sure I do that. So I'd say definitely some of it's me, but some of it's not me.
No, and I think what you and your husband have landed on is very valuable. And I want to slow down and highlight it. I mean, we spend a lot of time talking about the pursuit of financial independence, but I think the pattern that we see is that, and I'm thinking specifically of like Carl, Mr. 1500, mad scientist, you know, they've documented this journey and they hit FI and they realized that nothing really changed for them on the other side of hitting that magical number. Their life wasn't just incredibly better once they hit that magic number. It was just another day. And so many of us, especially when you get hooked into our community, you fixate on the wrong things. If you're just fixating on that FI number and you're willing to sacrifice quality of life and everything else just in the pursuit of that number, I think you're going to be disappointed. And Brad, I do think that we've tried over and over again to highlight that it's the journey, but I don't think anybody that we've brought onto this show has demonstrated that mindset game that you're talking about, Miss AR. And to illustrate that point even further, I realized as you're saying this that I don't have a FI number either. Like I know what I would need to pay my bills. I suspect you would as well. And you realize obviously with your husband quitting his job, that that's going to have a dramatic impact on how fast you can hit it. But along the way I hit happiness, right? Along the way, I found my dream job. I got my W-2 retirement. I'm able to pay my bills along the way with something that lights me up, and hitting a specific number no longer has the same value for me. It's the journey.
That's right there. Incredible. Where you said, I'm not hitting a number, but I'm hitting happiness. I think that's a really eloquent way of putting what my husband and I have been trying to do. And I really like the way you put that.
Thank you. I'm glad to contribute.
So let's talk about that decision for your husband to quit his job. That's a big step, obviously.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to put it mildly. So talk us through that. Talk us through how people who are on this path make that decision and actually implement it.
Yeah. So first thing, and I mean, this is just kind of my disclaimer, which I know both of you would agree with. Everyone's path is so incredibly personal. So I feel like I can give you this example and you may see things you kind of nod along with, but things that won't apply at all. So for my husband and I, we both work full time. When we moved back here to Northern Michigan, he was taking a new job and I was continuing with the job I had in Southern California, working full time remotely. So I work out of a home office. I work a pretty typical 8 to 4, 9 to 5-ish type of a job. My husband was working in the hospitality industry. And so his job was centered around weekends and holidays. So while he was working full time year round, oftentimes his week was either Tuesday through Saturday or Wednesday through Sunday. And either Sunday, Monday or Monday, Tuesday were his, you know, quote unquote weekend. So while we first kind of thought, hey, we can, you know, this isn't too bad, we can figure this out, as we kind of continued through the months, we just started noticing that the mismatched schedules were really affecting our lives pretty negatively. So we were realizing that time as a family, we were doing these adventures. We were trying to get in the summer to the beach in the evening or try to go grab the canoe and go somewhere. But as far as actually having a whole day off together to be able to spend and to relax and to enjoy, we really didn't have that very often. So in the winter and in the summer, he oftentimes is working both Saturdays and Sundays. And in the shoulder months, so kind of the spring and fall, he'd usually be working Saturday, not Sunday. He'd have Sunday, Monday off. even just having only one day off a week, suddenly I felt like that day that should be a day of relaxation and being able to spend some time together, we had all these to-dos because we didn't see each other a lot throughout the rest of the week. And as that kind of compounded, and there were just so many things would kind of get in the way, you know, we'd be invited to something on a Saturday and my son and I would show up. You know, it's completely fine. It worked. But after a while, we started to say, you know, is there a way that we could change this? Because we just got to a point where we could keep going. We could absolutely keep going. And we also realized how much of a privilege and a blessing it was that when we stopped and looked at our numbers, we realized, you know, we could keep going, but we could stop this. We could have you quit with no initial plan and see where we go from there. I just remember one day he came back home from work in October last year. I just took one look at him. I said, you need to quit. He looked at me. He's like, yes, I do. We pulled out a calendar and said, okay, when would be a good, you know, day to tell your boss? When would be a good last day? And we just started to chart that out. It's funny how simple that choice was once we realized how much of an effect this schedule was having on our life.
Yeah, I totally understand where you're coming from. And I was in one of these situations as well, where it was one of those every other weekend type deals. And you just feel like you're running around each other. You're never actually interacting with each other.
It was always the handoff, like, here's the kid, handing off.
Yeah. It's cool that you were in a position to be able to make this priority choice. And because your mindset game was so strong, it didn't break you in the process.
It's funny because as soon as that day happened where he came home and we realized, you know, you need to quit, when we sat down, looked at the calendar, set the date, suddenly I feel like this weight was lifted. And in a way, it's funny, we just suddenly got really excited and we started planning things. We, even in the last 2 months, I think he gave about two and a half months lead time to his boss. In those last couple months, we were enjoying our weekends more, the little bit of time that we had together. We just suddenly had this realization of, you know, we don't have to keep going, because we realized that the job that he had was making our life a grind. And we really didn't want to live that way if we had a choice. And by setting up, you know, and being wise with our money, we had that choice. And we hadn't been living at the rate of our incomes. We've been living below it and we've been saving. And yes, it means that we're not saving as much anymore. It means that, you know, we don't have as much to be able to invest with. We are certainly not going to be hitting FI as soon, but at the same time, it's that lifestyle that we wanted. And that, like you're saying, we're not hitting a number, but we're hitting our happiness right now. It's really been an incredible change so far.
You know, we didn't know when we hopped on the call with you this morning that you were going to tell us that your husband quit his job. I mean, this isn't the sort of thing that you just, you land on, but I think what ties it together, there's so many stories that I can point to where that happened. And it's not that, you know, it's the same personality types or the same type of job. But what did happen is the people that we were talking to had reclaimed financial control of their life and were able to make choices that were in their best interest. And so, Brad, I know I can point to you and you have a very specific story that you could talk about with almost the same thing. I have a story and we made a fully funded lifestyle choice change. You're now documenting yours and I'm sure we'll encounter many more of these. And to the people that are listening to this, to our audience, they have their own reflective versions of this story. And I think it's empowering to hear that you're not crazy. Yes, when you get some margin between yourself and the hamster wheel, you can choose happiness and the world keeps on moving. So very, very powerful, Mrs. Ayer. I'm so glad you took the time to share it with us. Now, normally this would be the end of the episode, but on this show, we'd like to give you the chance to tackle the hot seat. Are you ready for this?
Am I ever.
In a world drowning in debt and rampant consumption, trapped by the chains of lifestyle inflation, these questions highlight the secrets of those who have broken free. Welcome to the Choose FI Hot Seat.
All right, Mrs. AR, question number one, your favorite blog that's not your own.
All right. So right now I am absolutely loving Montana Money Adventures. Obviously there is the aspect of adventure. This is an incredible woman, Jillian, and her story with her and her husband and their children. She has a few children of her own. She's also adopted children. They initially took mini retirements, and now they have been retired for a few years. The writing that she has, she definitely goes through some of the financials. She definitely goes through some of the adventures. But the things that I've really appreciated from her blog are all of the mentoring content. She has incredible mentoring content where, you know, Brad, when you were asking me about how do you kind of become a reformed type A, look at some of the stuff on her site. She has basically walk you through how do you pinpoint some of the things that are important to you? How do you incorporate those into your life? How do you kind of improve your life in small ways every day? Honestly, every article kind of is breath of fresh air to me. And then as I get into like some of her more deeper like mentoring content, and she also has a mentoring program. I will say I haven't taken advantage of that. I'd love to someday, but just the stuff that she has on her site is really incredible and in a lot of ways, really beautiful.
Yeah, you're at least the second person, I think possibly more, who said that Jillian's site is their favorite. So yeah, we have to get her on the podcast. That's an imperative. So
she has an incredible story. Absolutely.
Nice. Okay. Question number two, your favorite article of all time.
All right. So I think one, and it's just because it stuck with me so much and I really resonated with it. And I think, Jonathan, you'll appreciate this. I really like the article about the fully funded lifestyle change that Slowly Sipping Coffee had published a few years ago. And I think that's the first time I'd heard of that term. And I think for me, that connected the dots that I needed to connect before I really understood FI or financial independence and retiring early, and realizing that the retiring early, that can be the optional part. You can not quite hit financial independence, but you could be doing something where you're really happy with your life. You're doing a passion job. That's funding your lifestyle. And you've got these investments in the background that are still growing and going. That was an article for me that just opened up the options. And for me, at least, I felt like broadened the community and kind of allowed it to catch so many more people who may be in the job that they absolutely love. And by seeing that article and saying, okay, so it isn't that I have to quit my job to be a true, you know, financial independence person. I just need to be trying to live wisely, get to a point where my finances are, you know, supporting my lifestyle. But part of that might be because I also have income coming in from doing what I love.
I have goosebumps. That's amazing. Yeah, that is absolutely an article that needs to be highlighted over and over again, because it is a framework shifting article that expands the message. Very, very powerful. All right. Question number three, your favorite life hack.
All right. So I think this has recently changed. So I'll give you two that are kind of ones in flux now. If you had asked me last year, being a working mom who travels quite a bit and having a husband who works as well, I would have said grocery delivery. I was using like Google Express and Amazon Subscribe and Save and all of those, and rarely going to the grocery store. It was great. Now that my husband has a little bit more time on his hands, there's some of those that I think we may rethink a little bit. So the one for this year, for 2018, my big life hack so far has been getting up early. And it doesn't happen all the time. It didn't happen today. But we have been actually trying to get up between 5 and 6 a.m. What we realized is when we get up at that time, we can have a couple hours before I head to the office. And again, the office is down a flight of stairs, but we have the time to have a cup of coffee, to read. Sometimes I'm training for some running events coming up this year. So I'll try to do like my stretching and yoga and things like that in the morning. You know, we just have that quiet time. We keep the house pretty dark, just turn on some lamps, and we have a little bit of time before our son gets up. We have a little bit of time before everything gets busy. It's just a really enjoyable time, and it kind of resets the focus for the day. And so I've really enjoyed that recently.
My ears perked up immediately when you said waking up early, because that's one of the things that I love most. And I find my waking schedule is cyclical during the year. So like right now, for whatever reason, I've been waking up later. For when, for me, later is like 6:20. So it's not, you know, it's not,
man,
not a big
sleeping
deal.
In.
Yeah, really. But I mean, it's a totally different day when you have to get up. You get up at 6:20, and I've got to wake my kids at 6:45, and then it's rush the rest of the day, right?
Yes.
As opposed to, okay, sometimes during the summer when it's light out, I'll be up at 5 o'clock, and I have that extra 90 minutes to, like you said, do some yoga, do some stretching, do some meditation, read, just do anything. And it's just so much more relaxing. So yeah, for anybody out there, like, I know it's difficult, but if you can find a way to work that into your schedule, to wake up early, even a couple times a week, you're going to find a lot of satisfaction from that. All right, Mrs. AR, question number four, your biggest financial mistake.
Oh, this is an easy one. So Mr. Adventure Rich and I had been married probably close to a year and a half, 2 years. We had a friend of ours come up with an investment opportunity. This is one of those, it's hard because I would like to, again, coming back to the reformed type A, I so badly just want to kick myself for this. And I've been really working hard not to, because we just didn't know anything about the investment. We didn't know anything about what was going on. We just knew it was an investment in kind of a commercial property type thing through the company this guy worked for. They needed money to fund it. We invested money. We are still told that we are going to get that money back. We have yet to see that. It was supposed to be a 1 year thing. That was about 3 years ago. So it is, you know, it is one of those things I look back and I'm like, even if we had just kept that money and invested it ourselves, like I look at the stock market or whatever, but I really have like told myself I can't do that because it is a mistake. I have to move forward with that. But oh, if I had known better, I would not have done that.
Ouch. Are we talking about a car, about the value of a car? Talking about value of a house?
Yeah, probably a modest car. So okay. Not incredible, but it's certainly a decent chunk of change for us.
Yeah, that'd be a little painful.
Yep.
All right. Well, question number five, the advice you would give your younger self. I'm assuming you would tell yourself not to invest in this, but if you have something else to add to that, we'd love to get any extra input.
I think for my younger self, this is something, I think the reason I'm saying this is because I didn't do this and I'm glad that I didn't. It's don't always think that you just have to go and kind of quote unquote follow your passion right away, because you don't know those unanticipated areas you might find your passion. So if you had talked to me my senior year of college, I would not have told you, or at the beginning of the senior year, I guess I was hired partway through, I would have told you I had no interest in the career I have had for 6 years now that I absolutely love. I would have told you I had no interest in personal finance. I would have told you I would have no interest in ever having a blog or writing. You know, there were so many things that I would just have said, no, like those aren't interests. Why would I do it? And there was a time, you know, my senior year, when I first started into senior year, I thought, well, I'm going to graduate. I'm going to go move out to the Rocky Mountains. I'll ski bum for a while, all these things. You know, there was a company recruiting at our school. I ended up applying, getting the job, had no idea what I was doing, and really stumbled into a career I love at a company that I really trust and like, and with incredible colleagues and mentors. So it's those kind of things where I'd say, like, don't always feel like you have to follow your passion. Allow yourself to kind of step back and find those passions and those kind of accidental, or the places you don't necessarily think they will be residing.
Yeah. Be open to life. Be open to serendipity, right? If you never know where it's going to take you.
Because it's funny, when I think about if I had kind of quote unquote followed my passion my senior year of college, I wouldn't have found the things that are really fulfilling my life right now.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I'm in the same boat. I could have never envisioned in a million years that I'd be sitting here as a podcast host, right? And that this is the thing that lights me up more than anything in the world. It's, you just never know where life is going to take you. So yeah, that's brilliant. And hey, we got one last bonus question, which is, your favorite purchase made on, let's say, Amazon.com or really anywhere, like has anything that you've bought in the last year or so made like a real significant impact on your life?
Yeah. So, and this is just kind of a fun one from the adventure side. My husband and I had been gifted snowshoes last year for Christmas from my parents. And so we used them a lot last year, and we had been dragging our son along in a sled. We'd like strap it to our waist around our property. This year, we tried to do the same thing, and our son's now a year older. He's 2.5, and he just was having nothing of it. He wanted to get out of the sled. He'd end up in like waist-deep snow. He just was not having it. So we ended up looking on Amazon and finding for, I think it was about $30 or $35, these little Lucky Bum snowshoes for two-year-olds, 2 to 5-year-olds. And so that was his Christmas present. He has absolutely loved them. We can strap them on. And in the summer, we have quite a bit of land, so he has just all this area to explore. In the winter, we don't want to just confine him to our driveway. So now with the snowshoes, he can join us. He can roam around our yard. He just has a blast with them. So that's been my favorite purchase in the past year.
Wow. This was a fun, fantastic interview. And it was so exciting to really dig deep into this life that you've built for yourself. I'm sure there's people that are going to have additional follow-up questions and probably going to want to make contact. What's the best way for people to reach you?
Absolutely. So I'm blogging over at adventurerich.com. And then I'm on Twitter and Instagram mostly. I do have a Facebook page, but mostly on Twitter and Instagram. It'll be at adventurerichly. So it's all one word, but with an L-Y at the end. Adventure Rich was taken, unfortunately. So at adventurerichly, both on Twitter and Instagram.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much. Always an adventure.
Wow, Brad, what an episode. You know, you don't always know where these conversations are going to go. I knew that Miss Adventure Rich had a wonderful story and that planned spontaneity was going to be something that was really fantastic to talk about. But this episode encompassed so much more, didn't it?
This was a great episode. We thought it would be fun, but man, I had no idea we were going to dive so much into the mindset. I just think she has it down. I'd really implore everyone, go back and listen to this episode again. It's amazing how like these little mindset tweaks just make such a huge difference in your happiness and the way that you approach life. And, you know, aside from that, lots of actionable tips. I mean, I know Laura and I are now going to get a laminated map, probably of both Richmond and the state of Virginia. Just write on it. Have those go bags available. Just be ready to let adventure take over in your life and have that little bit of planning. That's what makes the difference between doing something or just sitting around the house and doing what you normally do. So yeah, just absolutely loved everything about this episode.
Can't wait to get your feedback, guys, and talk about this more on Friday. If you enjoyed the show today, if you're getting value from the episodes, take 1 second and press the subscribe button on the platform that you're listening to this on. It just lets the providers know that you're getting value from this content and you want to be here when we produce additional shows. If you want to support Choose FI, here are 4 easy ways. 1, leave us an iTunes review. If you want to do that, just go to choosefi.com/iTunes. 2, use our page to sign up for travel credit cards. If you want to travel the world with miles and points instead of your hard-earned dollars, then just go to choosefi.com/cards and get started today. 3, if you're working on the milestones of FI, set up a personal capital account to track your progress and use our affiliate link. It's completely free and just go to choosefi.com/PC. P as in Paul, C as in cat. And 4, and most importantly, find your friends, coworkers, and family members who might be open to this message and tell them about the podcast. Have them start with episode 38, The Why of FI, and right behind that, have them go listen to episode 21, The Pillars of FI. It is a fantastic starting place. All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth, one life hack at a time.